My name is Ken Glass. As a young man growing up in the piney woods of East Texas, I was always fascinated by new technology. The race to the moon was the talk of the day. And I watched in wonder as Neil Armstrong stepped off the limb and into a new frontier. Later, I landed a job installing acoustic couplers in Houston, Texas. The acoustic coupler allowed people to connect remotely to corporate data and was the emerging technology of the day. This would pave the way for the modern modem. Working in technology led to opportunities in the energy sector. It was there that I was able to develop high-performance computing technologies that would forever change the oil and gas industry. I've had the good fortune to witness dramatic changes in technology, but nothing can compare to the advancements that we are experiencing today at Dell Technologies. That's what this podcast is about: technology that impacts our lives now and into the future. This is the Next Frontiers Podcast. If you are of a certain age, you will remember the animated show, The Jetsons. The show ran for 2 years in the early 60s and again in the mid 80s and spent 2 years in between in heavy syndication.
Oh, George, you pushed the wrong button again.
The Jetsons captured our imagination and projected it into the space age, gadget-fueled vision of the future. While far-fetched for the time, many of the futuristic items on the show are now common and even necessary in everyday life. Video calls, robotics, smartwatches, 3D printed food, flat-screen TVs, jetpacks, and drones were all portrayed in the show that debuted before many households had color TV. The show also featured a novel idea for moving people and products in a series of pneumatic tubes. Sounds pretty fantastic, right? To me, it sounds a lot like what my next guests are putting into motion right now.
My name is Ben James. I'm co-founder and CEO of Tubular Network.
Yeah, I'm Dylan Mankey, CTO and co-founder.
Tubular Network automates the delivery of goods in tubes, usually underground. So we have these robots that can traverse up to 60 miles an hour underground and also climb vertically to deliver things like e-commerce orders, meals, groceries, all kinds of things at the city scale.
Tubular Network is sort of the tip of the iceberg when we talk about how stuff moves in the future, particularly in more kind of urban areas, urban environments where you have a lot of stuff moving around. Today, we do that with trucks and cars. In the future, we'll need a higher throughput, lower cost, lower emissions solution to that. And Tubular Network is kind of at the forefront of that, using the technology that Ben just described.
Cars and trucks have been great historically, but they just don't scale well, primarily because of humans. So there's a few vectors. One is the labor required to drive and deliver around goods in these cars and trucks. It's getting harder and harder to find. The cost of labor is going up. The pool of labor for those kinds of jobs is not keeping up with the demand. Secondly, the traffic. We love ordering things at home, and therefore there's more and more traffic on the roads. So commutes are getting longer. Your car is idling in traffic. You've got more carbon emissions coming from that. So it's primarily because the human side of things does not scale well. This is not something that is going to accomplish what we need the next 5, 10, 20, 50 years as we start getting more and more delivered to our homes.
So the trend that we've seen certainly over the last 5 years with the pandemic, but we saw it happening even before that, was that we were moving away from the sort of many-to-many distribution model where a person went to a store to get all of their groceries in one place or to buy all of their clothes in one shopping mall, et cetera. More and more towards this kind of one-to-many or many-to-one, rather, model where a person gets an item delivered directly to their house, typically by a person or maybe a couple of people in a delivery truck, but you don't have that aggregation of things in a centralized location where everyone travels to anymore. People are having stuff kind of delivered to them individually. And you can imagine as more and more things in our lives have those connections where it's, you know, one person delivering one thing to another person, that it just doesn't scale well, as Ben mentioned.
One data point is an example. The World Economic Forum forecasts there's going to be a 36% increase in delivery vehicles in cities by 2030. So imagine all of the FedEx, Amazon, UPS, USPS trucks that you see in your neighborhood and increase that by 36% by the end of this decade. And imagine that trend growing over time. You can start to understand this is not a sustainable path forward. So imagine you're sitting on your couch, you pull out your phone, and you order something from an e-commerce website, and it getting there 5 minutes after you order it. What's incredible is that today, fulfillment centers can fulfill an order very quickly, sometimes within 90 seconds. And the delivery is the slow part. So imagine somebody in the fulfillment center getting that order fulfilled. They walk over to the edge of the warehouse. They put that box on a Tubular Network station. A Tubular Network robotic shuttle picks up that box, goes about 10 feet in, drops down below the ground into the underground network section, and starts driving up to 60 miles an hour, navigating its way directly to you. This robotic shuttle uses all electric propulsion to go up to 60 miles an hour, moving your box through that tube through horizontal intersections. It can even go through the vertical intersections to climb down as well as climb up to, for instance, the lobby of your apartment complex or even into your own home. And then you simply get off your couch, go over to the station that's say, for instance, an appliance in your kitchen, and pull that box out 5 minutes after you ordered it to get that thing, whether it's a hot meal or a pair of socks, whatever you need, got there 5 minutes after you ordered it and with zero carbon emissions. That's the future that we're building.
Zoomed out, maybe another, you know, if that was the 10,000 foot view, maybe the 30,000 foot view, which is to take it all the way back to the actual manufacturing of an item. So today, a company like Apple manufactures iPhones in China primarily, and they have to assemble all those different colors and sizes and, you know, all the different options that you can choose when you choose an iPhone. They have to pre-order all those and pre-assemble them months and months ahead and then put them on a ship and ship them over here and distribute them around so that you can go to the store and buy it. That's why the popular ones you can never get, because they're all already eaten up by other customers. Now imagine you put in that order for that, whatever, the iPhone 27 5 years from now, and you want it in the space gray and you want it in the 12 inch whatever, and you want all these options. And as soon as that order goes in, instead of that item being assembled in China, that item is assembled in Missouri. And that assembly plant is able to start assembling it as soon as you click buy now. They put it together, they test it, they put it in its box. 4 hours later, it gets put into a Tubular Network at their assembly plant. It makes the traverse, the journey to a nearby airport where it gets put on a commercial flight that's leaving that city and flying to your city, let's say Austin. That commercial flight lands. It's now been 7 hours since you clicked buy. That box gets taken off of that commercial flight, put into a Tubular Network at the Austin airport, and as Ben was describing earlier, traverses at 60 miles an hour across the city to your front door. So 8 hours after you clicked the buy button, a brand new, just assembled, just manufactured in the United States iPhone arrives at your house. You know, that reality, that world is only possible if we can reduce the overall cost and all the overhead in moving things around. Because today it requires too much energy and too much cost to move an item from point A to point B to not have things aggregated together into big trucks and driven around and whatnot by people.
So the infrastructure required for Tubular Network is really simple. It's off-the-shelf infrastructure that's available today. The one that we're starting with is used for storm drainage systems. So this is high density polyethylene, in other words, high density plastic tubing. You might be driving your car and at a construction site, see these big ribbed tubes in black or gray. That's the exact same kind of tube that we use as our conduit. And what's ideal about it is it's watertight, it's highly reliable. Underground, it'll last over 100 years. So this is a really well-made conduit or tube. And then what's more ideal about it for us is for us to put in a tubular network from point A to point B, we simply call up a utility construction company and say, come put a storm drainage-like system from point A to point B for us, please. And there's a huge ecosystem of utility construction companies and engineers who can do that work rapidly. You could look down your own street, and when you see a storm drainage system or sewage system, it's that same kind of ecosystem that already exists today going down your street.
Okay. Yeah, so your package won't be driving down the same, you know, roadway effectively that stormwater is flowing in, but the products and processes are all the same. That's the physical infrastructure aspect, which is definitely a big challenge. And definitely when you think about a citywide network, it's the thing that comes to mind. You're going to have to dig all these trenches. You're going to have to put all this pipe in the ground. But there's also a considerable amount of virtual infrastructure necessary to enable these same scenarios. All of the interplay and handoff between all these different systems. Earlier, I described flying a product on a commercial airline. That's the same, you're going to have to interface with those systems. You're going to have the virtual infrastructure to support those systems as well. It's one of the things that we're excited about working on with Dell and NVIDIA is designing and implementing the virtual infrastructure to give us sort of the digital twin so that we can optimize the physical world through kind of the virtual representation of it.
So currently we've built 170 prototypes. We've got a lab at the Austin Community College Impact Labs here in Austin, where we've got full-scale prototype working. We previously had it at the Austin Airport at a hangar that was really cool. But to be more direct, we don't have a system at the city scale yet. We're working with manufacturers at this point to put in the first system. So we were just talking about the construction plans of our first pilot to move manufacturing parts between buildings. And that'll be in the coming couple of months, which is pretty amazing for a startup that was just Dylan and I a mere year and a half ago. Not even to now be talking very seriously about moving manufacturing parts between buildings. But the cities that we have spoken to that are excited about this new way of moving things are cities like Austin and Detroit. Austin, very sustainability focused, very equity focused, very wanting to be what cities should be in the future. Detroit, rebuilding itself in a better way. It's incredible to go there and see how the city has started rebuilding itself. The people are just eager to see it. Michigan Central comes to mind specifically as this abandoned train station that was this glorious architectural feat at the time. And then when Detroit collapsed, became a icon of city ruin. And recently the Ford Motor Company poured $1 billion into buying it and building it back as a mobility innovation hub. The whole area around there called Corktown is now a transportation innovation zone that the city and state have worked with to green light experimental programs like tubular network technologies to show what the future should be. This is the laboratory for it. So Austin being very forward-looking, Detroit being very forward-looking, are frankly the first couple of cities that we've engaged with, and we found some really good receptivity. We just have to prove that we can start moving things, and I think it'll take off after that because the infrastructure is very easy to put in.
There's a sort of a somewhat logical progression to how we're approaching this. If we had from day one gone out and looked for investment to try and build a citywide network that would have cost us billions of dollars likely, it probably would have been a hard sell. So we're focused early on some of these high volume, short distance networks that really help optimize material handling and the movement of goods within scenarios like manufacturing or e-commerce. As we build out those capabilities, as we refine the technology, we'll then move into this phase two, which is master plan communities and places where there's sort of a virgin ground that's going to be broken to build out mixed use developments. And then from there, expand into existing cities. Absolutely the city of the future. I can't imagine a city of the future without something like Tubular Network, honestly. People are going to want to be able to get the things they need when they need them. That's sort of the promise of the city of the future, right? And if you have 1,000 drones swarming through the air or sidewalk robots clogging up every walkable street, not really meeting that that promise. So I think that it's a necessary piece of infrastructure for humanity to kind of evolve into the future that we wanna see.
There is a category of autonomous delivery vehicles, drones, sidewalk bots, even golf cart sized things that go on the road that are really interesting. And frankly, I look at all of them as a viable part of the future of what we call the Internet of Goods or hyperlogistics. And hyperlogistics means you order something and it starts moving towards you. It might get handed off from Tubular Network to a drone to a sidewalk bot, but the point is it's not batch transported mainly by a human anymore. It doesn't take hours to get that last mile to your house because it's doing a lot of other deliveries. It goes straight to you quickly. I think the future of last mile delivery includes all of those technologies. And I really look forward to a time where I can order something at my friend's house and it gets tubed from a warehouse in, let's call it the urban core, out to the edge of the city, handed off to a drone to go into the suburbs the last couple of miles, and all of that takes 7 minutes to get to me seamlessly. I think that's where the future is going.
As we think about sort of this hyper-logistics idea more broadly, I think the thing that's really interesting to me is to think about kind of the user experience and how technology enables that, right? Today, we use the internet, we use data so ubiquitously and without really any understanding of what's going on under the covers, right? You turn on your laptop, you pull out your phone, you hop on a Zoom call. To you, you're just talking directly to the person on the other end of that line. But in reality, there might be a dozen companies involved in that. Everything from the companies that own the actual fiber backbone that the data is being transmitted on to the companies that operate, well, primarily Amazon, but the companies that operate the cloud, you know, all of these different businesses that all operate on different tiers and different layers. That is what hyperlogistics will be for, as Ben mentioned, the Internet of Goods. And you'll pull out your phone and you'll say, hey, DoorDash, I want my hot meal. And that will be the extent of your kind of interaction with it. And there's this whole hidden infrastructure underneath, literally underneath your feet, that will help deliver that to you in minutes. And I think that's really the future that we're trying to build.
The team at Tubular Networks rely on high-performance hardware to map out a network and to run simulations. This is especially important as they leverage AI tools to build the future of delivering goods to our doorstep.
Dell has been, honestly, a bit of a surprisingly amazing partner in this whole journey. We kind of first started interacting with them just as a company purchasing laptops. You know, I was just reaching out to them and saying, hey, we need to buy some laptops for this startup. And we've since built a great relationship with them. You know, they've been very forward thinking in their ability to look at what we're doing and say, oh, we actually understand it. Not just we get it, but we understand how it could be valuable to us as a tool in our toolbox when we go and pitch these technology solutions. You know, I think it was surprising to me getting into this field to learn how many of these big technology companies aren't just selling the consumer products that you see every day. You know, most people's contact with Dell is, oh, I bought a Dell. You know, maybe they grew up in the 90s and they saw the "Dude, you got a Dell" commercials, and that's kind of the extent of their their understanding of who Dell is. The reality is that these companies are helping shape the technology of industries. They're helping shape the technology that runs our country. You know, they're interacting with ports, they're interacting with airports, they're interacting with municipalities, they're interacting with huge companies that are building out the infrastructure that's going to support them for the next 10, 20, 50 years. And being able to be a partner with them and being able to find people who understand our technology, it's not always an easy pitch to walk in and say, take an idea that everyone has understood for the last hundreds of years of moving stuff around and just throw it all out the window and replace it with a totally different way of thinking about that problem, a totally new solution. I'll put air quotes around new. I mean, people have been moving goods on tracked vehicles for a couple hundred years, but when we walk into a manufacturing facility, when we walk into an e-commerce facility and we say, okay, get rid of the forklifts, get rid of, you know, all of this manual operation and the trucks and all this and
staging areas.
Exactly, and replace it with a tube. People tend to look at us a little funny and it takes a little bit of time, but to meet folks in Dell who so quickly understood the value proposition and then were able to turn it around and understand how they could help that, how that could be something valuable to them to help pitch technology solutions has been amazing to watch.
I mean, really, we told them we want to move goods more like we move data. And they understand how data moves so well that they just instantly picked up on so much of the fundamental nature of our technology.
So when we looked at what we were going to need as we started to get deeper into the requirements to actually do some of the robotic simulation and that sort of work, it became very clear very quickly that we were going to need serious horsepower, and NVIDIA's pretty much the only player in that space that can meet the need. They've been amazing. When we started talking to them about their Omniverse solution and how we could kind of start stitching all this together, and we oftentimes talk to people about our CAD solution, which is a browser native CAD solution called Onshape. Oftentimes when I mention that to people, they go, oh, okay, I don't know what that is. I've never heard of it. NVIDIA had heard about it. They were like, oh, we actually have a plugin that lets you pull your data out of Onshape and put it in the Omniverse. And then you can use, you know, our processes for manipulating data and stuff to then pull that into IsaacSim, which is our robotic simulation service or software. And so we're now kind of just dipping our toe in, but starting to explore how we can build these digital labs, essentially, where we can create a fully simulated virtual environment that gives us all of the inputs, the visual inputs, the physics, everything that we need to essentially operate our robot as if it were in the real world, but in the virtual world. And that has a ton of advantages. I mean, the biggest is just cycle time. It just takes you a lot less time to export something into a digital environment and run tests than it does if you're operating or if you're having to build things in the physical world. But also, if you have computer vision systems and you need to train a computer vision system, for instance, in our case, to recognize when there is something unexpected in the tube and not run into it, it's a lot easier to do that when you can simulate hundreds of thousands of scenarios in a matter of minutes, as opposed to having to take a bunch of footage of things in a tube and then feed that into a machine learning model to train it how to identify good versus bad. So it's, I would say it's invaluable. In fact, one of the questions that we got a lot when we were first pitching this and talking to investors and stuff was, why now? Why is this technology going to succeed today and it wouldn't have 10 years ago? And one of my primary answers is that technology has advanced to the point where we can now do things at several orders of magnitude cheaper than we could even a decade ago. So all that machine learning capability that we get now off of a single Dell workstation running NVIDIA's Omniverse would have cost us hundreds of thousands of dollars in compute time and engineering resources to have built a decade ago. And so the technology that Dell and NVIDIA are bringing to the table in the tools that they give us enable us to be able to do things today that really just weren't practical.
Let's also talk about embedded and edge compute, because I feel like those were two categories not as highlighted that I'm pretty excited about.
There's sort of two ways to think about solving, particularly machine learning. Let's go back to the what we kind of, I don't know if it's an industry term or just a term of endearment that we use in the lab, but the hot dog, not hot dog problem, which is essentially, can a machine learning algorithm identify, is something a hot dog or is something not a hot dog? It's a relatively simple problem because you only have to be able to identify one thing or it's not that one thing. We have that same problem with the package in a tube or tube environment. Is the tube environment safe or not? We could solve that problem by having some big, powerful machine learning algorithm that runs in the cloud and we stream all the data back to it. That would take a lot of bandwidth. That would require us to always have an internet connection. NVIDIA has these great little processors that they build, these little embedded systems that have GPU cores, GPU compute capability built onto what's effectively, not that much bigger than, I don't know, a couple decks of cards. We've been using the Jetson Nano, which is kind of the smallest in their line, but they have a whole line of these little single board computers. And they allow us to train a computer vision model using all that data that comes out of the Omniverse and a bunch of compute power asynchronously offline, and then put that model that's the result of all that training embedded on that little single board computer running on the robot and do all of that detection and all that, you know, identifying anomalies and deciding whether or not the tube is safe right there in line, real time on the robot, which is an incredible capability. And again, you know, you go back a decade and something that the compute power just wasn't there. The technology and the science behind the models weren't there. It's a huge game changer in terms of robotics, for sure.
It's also worth mentioning in terms of technology is the edge compute component of this, which is Dell and NVIDIA, where they play together really well. So Dell and NVIDIA make edge computing systems that are meant to be out in infrastructure and in parts of the city. For us, it will be the swarm or hive mind where these shuttles communicate to each other. They communicate to the hive and then the hive communicates back to them. Well, that hive brain is going to be a Dell and NVIDIA system embedded underground with them.
As a member of the Dell Technologies team, I am proud to support endeavors that not only align with our 2030 goals, but also create a better world.
Yeah, I think Dell's 2030 goals, focusing on making the world a better place, are absolutely where the brains and thought leaders and movement in business need to be marching towards. And that absolutely fits with what we're doing at Tubular Network. Once the infrastructure is in place, there's nothing better than Tubular Network in terms of being a faster delivery, a more reliable delivery, a cheaper delivery, and a more sustainable delivery. It is the most energy efficient form of last mile delivery on planet Earth. And so we like partnering with Dell to help deliver their 2030 goals, pun intended, because they're the ones worthwhile for us as humans.
Yeah, and I think that it's good that we have companies like Dell that have a focus on sustainability. You know, I think one of the things that Ben and I have spent a fair bit of time talking about as well is sustainability is important, but equity is also important. And one of the things that we feel passionate about is that we should be building a company and technology that furthers equity somehow, helps. If we build a more sustainable future, we also have to build an equitable future so that it's not just a sustainable future for the wealthy, right? It has to be there for everyone. And I think that there's a big opportunity for us to solve problems that today seem relatively intractable or at least, you know, pretty big hills to climb One that we've talked about a number of times in the past is food deserts. So if people aren't familiar with food deserts, it's this idea that there are parts of cities, usually low-income urban parts of cities, that don't have reasonable access to healthy food within a reasonable distance. So getting to an actual grocery store with fresh fruits and vegetables is so challenging, whether it's because of traffic or because of distance, that a lot of the people in that part of that city don't have access to. It's not practical for them to do. You introduce a service, an infrastructure like Tubular Network and an idea like hyperlogistics, you now get to solve that problem, much like data. Obviously, there's still a long way to go with equity to high-speed internet, you know, equitable access to high-speed internet, but we've made a lot of progress in those regards, and more people are getting more and more access. If we can do the same thing for access to stuff like healthy food, a tubular network could mean that you have access at a cost that could easily be subsidized down to zero to an array of healthy foods. You could do, food pantries could have a much wider distribution area because it wouldn't require someone to physically come to a location to get food. So there's a lot of opportunity for us to do a lot of good as we build out this new form of infrastructure.
Going from zero grocery stores in your neighborhood to all of your city's grocery stores is pretty powerful.
Thank you, Dylan and Ben, for sharing your vision for the future, and thank you for listening. Join us next time as we discuss how voice is now playing an important role in financial services. I'm Ken Glass, and this is Next Frontiers.